Rich Kimble here, Bruce Pratt joining us for Sports Lit 101. And also on the line with us, gentleman who's returning to the program. He is one of the founders of Rounder Records, former college professor, and the author of nearly 100 books, many of them about the Boston Red Sox, including his newest, Red Sox in Fives and Tens, Boston's Agony and Ecstasy. We're happy to welcome Bill Nolan back to the show. Bill, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be back. Normally I'd be looking for the Kansas City Royals playing at Fenway Park in about 2.5 hours, but I don't think that's happening tonight.
No. How's it been going for you? How badly are you missing the game of baseball?
I think most of us are missing it quite a lot. I'm trying to fill the time doing research and whatever, but it's definitely different.
Well, the new book is wonderful. I've enjoyed looking through it and remembering some great names from the past, some that I had nearly forgotten along the way, but I don't know what it says about me, but I think more entertained by some of the agony than the ecstasy. And the one that stood out to me was Red Ruffing, who set some incredible records for the number of losses he racked up in his time with the Red Sox.
Oh yeah, one of the books I did actually for SABR, Society for American Baseball Research, I worked on it with my son. We called it 20 Game Losers. Because, 20-game winners are a well-known and treasured commodity in baseball. But 20-game losers, there were plenty of people. I mean, Cy Young himself, I think, had three different seasons that he lost 20 games, even though he might have won 34 games at the same time. They had a long, a lot of starts back then. But, there definitely were guys that lost 20 more games. And Ruffing was a difficult time for him to be with the Red Sox in the 1920s. They were not a good team at all.
I also enjoyed the chapter on debuts by Red Sox players. We had a chance to talk with Billy Rohr a couple of years ago, and he's at number 2 on your list, and it was pretty hard to top. Only one guy could do it, Billy Rohr's performance in his big league debut against the Yankees.
Yeah, I remember. I wasn't there, of course, but I remember that game, and to come so close to a no-hitter, your very first game in the major leagues, the only thing you could do to top it was to throw a no-hitter later, but that didn't happen.
No, and the only guy that topped it in your book was a young Daniel Nava with a little bit of an assist by our friend Joe Castiglione.
Yes, I was there for that game. I was sitting out in left field in the grandstand there, and guy comes up, rookie. He was signed for $1. It's no $5 million bonus or anything. He was signed for $1 out of independent baseball. His first at-bat in the major leagues was on June 12, 2010, almost 10 years ago now. And he talked to Joe Castiglione in the clubhouse before the game, and Joe said, you're only going to ever see one pitch as your first pitch in the major leagues. You know, be ready for it. He came up with the bases loaded. First pitch, grand slam.
Yeah, tough to top that one along the way. Bruce Pratt joining us. We had some computer issues, but Bruce, so welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be back. It's nice to hear your voice again, Bill.
Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, I am. One of the questions I wanted to ask you is that you obviously did meticulous research for this. It's a great book that way. But was it more fun trying to figure out the intangibles when you were making these lists and looking at the exact metrics? Because they're such thoughtful lists and such thoughtful annotations.
Well, thanks. I don't know. It's just a combination of it all. It's hard to disentangle the two in some ways.
I especially enjoyed the chapter on foreign players. It was good to see Win Remmerschwall's name again. And I had forgotten about the wonderful pitching performance that baseball's rules makers took away from Devern Hanczak.
Oh, yeah. I still count that as a no-hitter. It was 5 innings long. He pitched the game. The opposing team never got a base hit off him. It's in the record books as a complete game. It's a victory. I mean, if it's a complete game and there were no hits by the opposition, even if it was only 5 innings, there's a no-hitter. He couldn't help it that rain came and washed out the rest of the game.
You've also got the chapters of what I call the Moonlight Graham chapters, the chapters on players who only had one hit, even though Moonlight only had well, not even that, and those pitchers who only had one win, and there are some great names and some wonderful stories there. That had to take some serious research.
Yeah, I mean, sure, you have to go through every pitcher and try to see how they did. You know, how many, you see they got one win, but how many times did they try to get a win? One of them was, his father was a pitcher for the Red Sox too, Dick Ellsworth, but Steve Ellsworth in 1988, he got one win and lost six games. That happens. I just talked to somebody on the phone a couple of days ago. I'm trying to remember who it was right now. I just did an interview. I talked to so many of these guys, I can't keep them straight or something, but he had one win in the major leagues. It wasn't with the Red Sox, so that's why I can't remember him as well. It was for the Angels.
When you were deep into this research, you must have at some point come across something that just blew you away or was so revealing that it sticks with you. Am I right about that, or was it all pretty much what you expected to find?
I'm sure that happened many times. As you ask the question, nothing comes right to mind. But, I mean, that was the fun of doing the book, is some of the stories I knew, certainly, but they were surprises. I just, right on the spur of the moment here, I can't pick one out. Sorry.
Well, the one that surprised me, Bill, and I didn't know the story, and it's a fascinating story. Can you talk a little bit about what you call in the book the exceptionally strange case of Joe Harris?
Yeah. I remember writing up his biography for Sabre. It was way back when. Was it 1906?
Right.
Yeah. He was 2-21 that year. I mean, the year before, he won a game. He could have retired then and been in the chapter of pitchers with only one win. But he came back the next year and he won two more, but he lost 21. I mean, imagine being 2-21 in this day and age. And the weird thing about it was they signed him again for 1907. I mean, that must say something about the pool of talent available to them. And then he didn't win any games in 1907. He lost another seven games.
In that game he pitched in 06, 23 innings of one-run baseball.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was a good pitcher, obviously, but he lost the game. It was one of those 21 games he lost. But, I mean, maybe Dick Raddatz would have done it in his day, but with the strict pitch counts they have today, you have a pitcher that could be pitching a no-hitter after seven innings, and it's almost expected that they take him out of the game instead of let him keep going.
Preston Gomez did that once, as I recall.
Yeah.
Took somebody out in the ninth inning, I think, when they had a no-hitter going.
Yeah. And there was a Red Sox pitcher recently who was, might have been Chris Sale. He was on, I think it
right.
was, a
yep.
couple years ago, he was on par. He could have hit 20 strikeouts. I think he might have been up to 16 with six outs to go or something like that, and they took him out, and he was okay with it because he believed in the pitch count.
When you look at the metrics of pitchers and you compare, I just read the great book called The Called Shot about the 1932 World Series. You look at pitch counts, you look at innings pitched over the season, you look at the number of wins and complete games. What do you think, do you believe that the science today is right, or are we seeing all these extra Tommy John injuries, things because pitchers don't pitch enough?
I couldn't answer that. Not by my doctorate is in political science. It does seem that they're a little bit more cautious than they need to be, but we're talking about multimillion-dollar investments here, and the pitchers themselves, for the most part, buy into it. So it's hard to fault them. If you've got a guy who's got a chance at setting an all-time record, though, I think you might want to let him go.
Yeah,
do it.
One of my favorite little tidbits in the book, and I knew he had done it once, but I didn't remember that Marty Barrett pulled the hidden ball trick three different times.
You know, I try. It's hard to focus because it happens so infrequently. But I try to watch during games to see if anybody... I've never seen one live. I've seen four no-hitters. I've never seen a hidden ball trick, and I probably never will. It's really rare. It's considered Bush League by a lot of players, but... Yeah, he pulled it off.
And Bill, this book is great, Red Sox in fives and tens, but I understand you're already working on a new book through Sabre.
Well, I'm always working on other books. The next book I've got coming out will be with a different publisher, Summer Game Books. That's about Major League umpires. I spent the last 4 years interviewing. I interviewed 70 of the Major League umpires, which is almost every one of them, and talking about their background, how they became an umpire, the work conditions of work. It's a really tough life. They never spend a week in the same city unless it's Chicago when they're working three Cubs games and three White Sox games or something. I'd love to come back and talk to you again about that at some point.
Oh, we hope you will. I would love to have you back. Always fun to talk baseball with you. Also want to note, too, that the foreword of this book is written by a friend of our show and just one of the nicest guys that you'll ever deal with. How wonderful is Rico Petrocelli?
Absolutely. I asked him not having any idea if he would go for it, and he wrote a wonderful, just a few paragraphs, but very complimentary, which I appreciated. And he looked at the book. I mean, he didn't just jot off something. You could tell he read the book and enjoyed it himself.
Well, Bill, it's a great read. We needed it, especially without any Red Sox on TV or the radio, and it's always fun for us to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us once again, and we'll have you back when that new book comes out.
I will say I know what you mean about the agony being maybe at least as attractive for most Red Sox fans.
That's our perspective on the world, isn't it? Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
That's Bill Nolan talking about his new one, Red Sox in Fives and Tens, Boston's Agony and Ecstasy, with us here on Downtown. Bruce, what have we got coming up next week on Sports Lit?
Well, I think we're probably going to have to take 2 weeks to do this book. It's the book I just mentioned. The title is The Called Shot, Babe Ruth, the Chicago Cubs, and the Unforgettable Major League Baseball Season of 1932 by Thomas Wolfe, which I was worried when I first picked it up because it's a big book. Oh, God, I hope this isn't a blow-by-blow, minute-by-minute, pitch-by-pitch account of a whole season. What it is the most wonderful story of 1932 seen through the lens of the 1932 World Series and Ruth's. Well, we don't know whether he did or he didn't, but most of the players think he did call a home run into the right field seats.
Excellent. We'll look forward to that.
Really good book.
Sports Lit coming up next week on Downtown.